Sean. Thank you for coming to this program of Krishna Consciousness, and thank you for inviting me to speak something about Krishna Consciousness. By the grace of Srila Prabhupada, we're all sitting here, fortunately, more fortunate than other residents of this city. You're all taking advantage of the human form of life while it lasts, and we don't know how long it does last. So, we'll be speaking tonight from Bhagavad Gita as it is. This is the translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who's founder and acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. But, we'll speak from the 15th chapter, which is entitled Yoga of the Supreme Person, Purushottama Yoga. And the text is actually text 14, but I'm going to review a little bit from text 12 and 13 as well. Is that okay? Because according to the acharyas, they go together, as you'll see. So let's begin with Mangala Charana. Om Ajnana Timirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Shri Chaitanya Manodhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Paramahyam Karati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guruh Shri Yudhavarakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sahajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vidam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadbhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hare Priye Vansha Kalpata Rukyascha Kripa Sindhu Jayvacha Vajitanam Bhavanebho Vaishnavetho Namo Namah Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Yadaditya gatam te jo jagat bhasayate khilam Yat chandramasi yat chaknao tatte jo vidhimakam. The splendor of the sun, which dissipates the darkness of this whole world, comes from me. And the splendor of the moon and the splendor of fire are also from me. This is Krishna speaking to Arjuna, of course. He's describing his opulences within this material world. Srila Prabhupada, I won't go too much into detail, but in his purport, Srila Prabhupada reminds us that without Krishna's mercy, there cannot be the sun, and without his mercy, there cannot be moon, and without his mercy, there cannot be fire. And without the help of sun, moon, and fire, no one can live. Do we know how this is so? How is it that you cannot live without the sun, moon, and fire? That we'll discuss a little bit. These are some thoughts to provoke Krishna consciousness in the conditioned soul. We'll go on to text 13. Gama visyaja bhutani dhariyami ahamojasa pushnami chaushadhihi sarvaha somo bhutvara satmakaha. I enter into each planet, and by my energy they stay in orbit. I become the moon, and thereby supply the juice of life to all vegetables. Here Srila Prabhupada describes the these two things, he's explained them. the energy of the Lord sustaining all the planets, and the energy of the Lord that in the form of the moon is also nourishing all living beings. We can discuss this in some more detail. Finally, today's verse is Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva Praninam Deham Ashritah Pranapana Samayuktah Pachani Annam Chaturvisham. Everybody has books. Do we want to chant the verse responsibly? Yeah. Okay. So please repeat. Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva.
Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva.
Praninam Deham Ashritah.
Praninam Deham Ashritah.
Pranapana Samayuktah.
Pranapana Samayuktah.
Pachamyannam Chaturvidham.
Pachamyannam Chaturvidham.
Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva.
Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva.
Praninam Deham Ashritah.
Praninam Deham Ashritah.
Pranapana Samayuktah.
Pranapana Samayuktah.
Pachamyannam Chaturvidham.
Pachamyannam Chaturvidham.
Someone else want to speak?
Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva.
Praninam
Deham Ashritah.
Praninam Deham Ashritah.
Pranapana Samayuktah.
Pranapana Samayuktah.
Pachamyannam Chaturvidham.
Pachamyannam Chaturvidham.
Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva.
Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva.
Praninam Deham Ashritah.
Praninam Deham Ashritah.
My plenary portion.
My plenary portion.
as the digesting fire.
As the digesting fire.
Bhutva.
Bhutva.
Becoming.
Becoming.
Praninam.
Praninam.
Of all living entities.
Of all living entities.
Deham.
Deham.
In the bodies.
In the bodies.
Ashritaha.
Ashritaha.
Situated.
Situated.
Prana.
Prana.
The outgoing air.
The outgoing air.
Apana.
Apana.
The downgoing air.
The downgoing air.
Samayuktaha.
Samayuktaha.
Keeping in balance.
Keeping in balance.
Pachami.
Pachami.
I digest.
I digest.
Annam.
Annam.
Foodstuff.
Foodstuff.
Chatuhuvidam.
Chatuhuvidam.
The four kinds.
The four kinds.
A translation by Srila Prabhupada in purport. I am the fire of digestion in the bodies of all living entities, and I join with the air of life, outgoing and incoming, to digest the four kinds of foodstuff. Please repeat. I am the fire of digestion.
I am the fire of digestion.
In the bodies of all living entities.
In the bodies of all living entities.
And I join with the air of life.
And I join with the air of life.
Outgoing and incoming.
Outgoing and incoming.
To digest.
To digest.
The four kinds of foodstuff.
The four kinds of foodstuff.
Report. According to Ayurvedic Shastra, we understand that there is a fire in the stomach which digests all food sent there. When the fire is not blazing, there is no hunger. And when the fire is in order, we become hungry. Sometimes, when the fire is not going nicely, treatment is required. In any case, this fire is representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vedic mantras, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 5.9.1, also confirm that the Supreme Lord, or Brahman, is situated in the form of fire within the stomach and is digesting all kinds of foodstuff. I am Agnir Vaishvanaro Yoyam Antaha Purusha. Therefore, since he is helping the digestion of all kinds of foodstuff, the living entity is not independent in the eating process. Unless the Supreme Lord helps him in digesting, there is no possibility of eating. He thus produces and digests foodstuff. He produces the food, and he also digests the food. So we're not independent. And by his grace, we are enjoying life. In the Vedanta Sutra 1.2.27, this is also confirmed. Shabdadi bhyantah pratishthanatya. The Lord is situated within sound and within the body, within the air, and even within the stomach as the digestive force. There are four kinds of foodstuff. Some are drunk, some chewed, some are licked up, and some are sucked. And he is the digestive force for all of them. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. As I mentioned, the Acharya is commenting on this passage of the Bhagavad Gita. They consider that, well, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur considers that the three verses, texts 12, 13, and 14, go together. Srila Prabhupada's purport follows from his comment. Baladev Vidyabhushan adds that text 15 is also within this passage, so he sees four verses as taken as a unit. Because just as the idea here is that just as the Lord is supplying from our external environment the resources that we require to live, even physically, in this world, so in the same way, in the subtle body, the intelligence, he's also entering there, and he is helping us as we desire, and in accordance with our karma. Might as well read that verse, because we've already discussed it. Sarvasya chaham hrita sannivishto matta smritir jnanam apohanam cha vedaishta sare rahaneva vedyo vedanta krit veda videva chaham. I am seated in everyone's heart, and for me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas, I am to be known, Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. So these are all connected thoughts. They are talking about very, very different things. And in today's verse, Srila Prabhupada has mentioned, according to Ayurvedic Shastra, we understand that there is a fire in the stomach that digests all the food sent there. That fire is called by various names, Jatharagni, Jatharanala, Ityadi. In so many ways, the fire of digestion is named in different manners. But without that activity of the fire, there is no possibility of eating and digesting properly. Before my mother passed away, she had an incurable condition known as Crohn's disease, and she was not able to digest the things that she ate. So she had to be given a special facility operation, and it was a big problem. Generally, Srila Prabhupada, as he writes here, it's very interesting, he says, just one moment. Sometimes when this fire is not going nicely, treatment is required. So, this is actually Krishna. The fire that is working within the stomach is actually Krishna. And we can see that the sun, the moon, and fire are all necessary. Fire is actually a different element than the sun. It's a different presiding deity as well. Fire is presided over by Agnidev. The sun is presided over by Ravi, or Surya, Surya Narayana. And the moon is presided over by Chandra, or Soma. All these things are very much interrelated, and they're all necessary to sustain life in this world. Generally, we suffer from too much fire, or from too much sun. Yesterday, we went to do a small program for a short while at Google in San Jose. And we were outside at midday for a short time we were sitting there. I was sitting in the shade the most of the time. But in 10 minutes, maybe maximum, I had 10 minutes exposure to the full sun at midday. And you can see how red my face is as a result. So that's unnatural, because we actually have tampered with the environment to the extent that the natural balance that is found in nature is no longer there. So people get fried by just a few minutes association with the sun god. There's an important thing to consider here. In the Charaka Samhita, which is an Ayurvedic text, we find the idea there as Ojaha Somatmakaha. Ojaha Somatmakaha. What is ojas? Does anyone know? Ojas is it's like the soothing power that connects, that allows us to connect to harmonizing and nourishing properties from our external environment. How do we access nourishing and soothing properties from our external environment? We can ingest these, so to speak, through the air, coming in contact with the air, coming in contact with the sun, as I said, coming in contact with the moon. This is a very welcome thing in India, where the sun is very hot. People like to go out into the moon as well. And in this way, we, through eating also, through drinking also, even through breathing, we intake the elements that are flying throughout the universe, or floating throughout the universe, especially Soma and Agni and Marut. These are three that are very prominent. These are all demigods. They're all devatas, as I like to say. Cosmic scale, mid-level management, you might say, of the cosmic manifestation. So ojas is actually the power supply for the mind-body complex. And ojas is nourished by, it's actually the essence of this ojas is soma. Soma is that cooling property that is found naturally throughout the universe, just like the moon. When you sit in the moonshine, you feel cooling rays, not heating. And those rays are very nourishing in subtle ways that are beyond the conception of modern science, but not beyond the conception of perfected sages who wrote these shastras. As a matter of fact, scholars have noted that there is tremendous, almost uncanny, consistence between various departments of knowledge that we find in Vedic literature. In Jyotish Shastra, which is better known as astrology in the English language, and in the Dharma Shastra, which are the manuals of normative behavior in human civilization, and in the Ayurvedic Shastras, which are the medical texts, we might say, they're all assuming the same essential principles, that there is a supreme lord. He has representatives in the form of these various demigods, and these demigods they exist throughout the universe in subtle forms, and we can derive benefit from their influence. So we're talking now about three things that are mentioned in these verses. What are they? Sun, moon, fire. This is what Prabhupada is emphasizing here. So, when we have an imbalance in our external environment, that necessarily creates an imbalance within the internal environment, the mind-body complex. It's the mind and body are porous. This is what we mean. We are not immune to external associations, however gross or however subtle they are. They influence us. We may not be able to perceive it. It may not be something that we've been taught, but this is actually the fact. And those who are self-realized can see this. So if there's an imbalance in, say, as I mentioned already, the sun, this is one of the items mentioned here, then what happens? We become depleted in another area. Soma becomes depleted. So the cooling, nourishing properties of soma, they become dried up or destroyed. In the Charaka Samhita, there's a half shloka that describes several causes for the depletion of ojas, which is the result of the depletion of soma. He says, abhikhatat, kshayat, krodhat, shokat, dhyanat, shramat, kshutam. Those who don't understand Sanskrit know what this means. Abhikata, from physical trauma, or one is injury, you might say. And that is a cause of the loss of soma within the mind-body complex. You can also lose it through kshaya. That means, I guess you can say, old age or depletion of various sorts. Through krodha, through anger. When you get angry, you dispense your reserves of soma at your own expense. It may feel good emotionally to lash out at someone, but ultimately you only harm yourself. So anger is, therefore, Krishna says, he goes so far as to say, lust, anger, and greed. Lust, this is another one, for the men at least. The loss of the vital fluid of a man, semen, is a tremendous loss, because it also contains this ojas in tremendous degrees. So it's a very serious thing. And Krishna says, what are the three gates that lead to hell? Lust, anger, greed. You see? So that comes to the next thing. Shoka, dhyanat. Dhyana means to be focused on something, obsessing, you might say. To obsess over things, as we say in modern parlance. This is called dhyana. To just go over, to cogitate something in your mind, unnecessarily, unnaturally. This is called dhyana. And of course, shoka, how would we translate shoka in modern parlance? Depression. Right? Half of this country is depressed. I mean, at least the younger generation. Devamrita Swami quoted some facts and figures, as he always does, that 57% of all the college students in North America have been clinically diagnosed with at least one psychological disorder. What's that going to do to the next generation? Anyone have kids here? Think about it. So, these are some things that we can think of. So, Another cause that's not mentioned here, or let's finish the list first of all. So Janat and Shramat from overwork. We know about this. Anyone who's in the medical profession knows about it. there's also IT. Overwork also means unnatural hours, just like if you're in IT, right? You stay up late at night sometimes, and especially in India, they have these call centers. There have been riots about this because it's so destructive on so many levels. So that's called shrama, too much work, overwork. And then finally, kshudha, if you have hunger, can't have enough to eat. That's usually not a problem in this country, but there are many places in the world where it is a problem. That also depletes soma. So these are some of the things. There's some extra things also I mentioned already. One and another one is electromagnetic frequencies. Everybody knows about that. We're so electronically connected. And what about cell towers? You know, this is perhaps a subjective matter because someone would, an intelligent person listening to this lecture would question, well, how does Chataka Samhita know about cell towers? Right? So there are three causes for blockages that are mentioned in the Chataka Samhita. Amavisha is one of them. That means generally acidity or toxicity of various sorts. That's why we scrape our tongues in the morning. You ever see all that gunk there? That stuff adds up, and where does it go? It turns into, you know, case-hardened toxicity that ultimately makes you sick in the long term. Another one is Indravajravisha, which means basically electric power. Indravajra, and what does Indravajra mean? Lightning, right. So lightning means electricity. Electromagnetic frequency, what's the difference? Koifarkani. So then, these are some problems, and these things are very, very prominent in modern society. The list that I just read from, people are traumatized, people are anxious, people are depressed, people are working too hard, people are sometimes, we get injured from time to time, people get angry as well. You see, these are all very, very prominent things, and they all deplete soma, which leads to a depletion of ojas, and as we mentioned, ojas is the power back of the mind-body complex. You've got to maintain a certain level of ojas at all times, otherwise you will run into problems, disease, or even death. If there's a problem that this ojas, a certain percentage, this requirement, baseline requirement, they call this, there's a name for it, Ardhanjali Pramana Ojas. It is required, it's distributed throughout the body, and it's flowing through what we call nadis. Nadis are the, you know, srotas, the currents throughout the body. And this acts as a natural power backup for the body. If there's a problem, we might call it your immune system. One thing is that's been demonstrated in Ayurveda is that if there is a if there's low pH, there's also low ojas. And if there's high pH, there's also good ojas, good amount. But that's just an interesting observation. So it coordinates and connects all physical systems within the body. Therefore, we have to actually worry about these things. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada can say as boldly as he does, that we depend on Krishna's mercy for all these things to function properly, because it's not going to happen in this Kali Yuga. Otherwise, things are completely haywire. It's a very good thing that there is Krishna, and that he's ultimately the one who's supplying the Shakti to all these things. Therefore, he says, let's go back to verse 13. You'll recognize the words here. Gam avishya cha bhutan. Gam avishya cha. I enter into the earth, bhutani dharyani, and I sustain all the living entities. How? Ojasa. Through ojas. Now it makes a little more sense, doesn't it? Through ojas I do this. It's a very, very deep topic. There are many, many, many volumes written on this topic. And, you know, it's very easy to gloss over it because Bhagavad Gita is not really meant to explain that sort of thing in such detail. But it can be explained. And I mentioned already, pushnami. Krishna says, I nourish. This is the nature of the soma energy and is the function of the ojas within the body. Pushnami choshati sarvaha. Now, where do the vegetables get their potency? Where do the herbs that we get all medicines from, whether it's allopathy or Ayurveda, you get it ultimately from plants, you see? So where do they get their potency? That's kind of like asking, where do the senses get their potency? Right? What the Upanishads, the Shruti mantras actually ask this question. What is the seeing power that makes the eyes see? What is that hearing power that makes the ears hear? Right? There are many things we can say about that. But the very potency of the senses, the very potency of all elements, and even these demigods. Krishna is entering in within the demigods also and enlivening them. In every way, he's got all the bases covered. So somo bhutva rasatmakaha. So somo rasatmakaha, it says here in the Bhagavad Gita. Somo rasatmaka. This soma is full of rasa, and rasa is that nourishing property. I mentioned already in the Charak Samhita, it said oja somatmakaha. Oja is somatmaka, but soma is rasatmaka. Is it making sense? Do you all understand this term, or do I need to translate? Oja somatmaka means that this ojas that we've been describing, it is of the nature of somas. It is full of somas, of soma, the cooling, soothing, nourishing properties that come mainly from the moon. Because remember, we're discussing three things here. Moon, sun, fire. So the moon is very, very important in the modern day and age because we are depleted of the natural and beneficial properties of the moon through injudicious lifestyle, mainly. So, oja somatmaka, although the oja is full of soma, what is soma full of? Somo rasatmakaha. This is what Krishna says in this verse. Soma is full of rasa, and rasa means what? Nectar. What else does rasa mean? Think Taittiriya Upanishad. Those who are learned will know. Huh? Raso vaisa. This Supreme Absolute Truth Himself is that rasa. Akhila rasamrita murti, in the language of Rushila Rup Goswami. He is the ocean of all rasa. Even that rasa that we require to sustain ourselves physically. What to speak of emotionally and otherwise. And mark well, the moon is also in charge of what?
Mind.
Your emotions, your mind. Therefore, when Saturn sits on your moon, that's called Sarde Sati. Everybody knows what happens when you're in Sarde Sati. Because the Saturn is suffocating that property of the moon to make you feel comfortable, basically. That's how it works. Okay, so these are a few thoughts that we can elaborate on here. Commentators are all pretty simple on these points. Ramanujacharya says a few things that, basically he's just reiterating the same points. Prithivyascha bhuta dharinya dharakatva shaktir madhya ityaha. He says that Krishna is telling us that the potency for bearing us all is coming from him, and through the activities of the earth's bhuta dharini. What is bhuta dharini? The potency to sustain all living beings. Earth is called, we've mentioned several times in the last several days, not dhatri. What do we call the earth? Dharati. Yeah, dharati. So it means it's all coming from this dhatu. And the verbal root dhri actually means to sustain. You see? And dharma also means to sustain. And dharma also means the intrinsic property of a thing. So the intrinsic property of this lunar energy, we can say, is, soma. And the intrinsic property of soma is rasa. And the intrinsic property of rasa is Krishna. Sri Krishna ki jai. He's called Rasamrita Murti. All right, we don't want to dilate too much on that. But one of the other things that we can explain here is that there are four kinds of foodstuffs that this fire of digestion within our stomachs. Actually, the word deham is glossed by commentators such as Baladev Vidyabhushan here as udaram. What does udaram mean? Stomach, yeah. Deha actually means body, but in this context, he takes it.
as udra. It's interesting because Srila Prabhupada translates it here as, I think he also says bodies. It's not incorrect. In the bodies. So either way, you want to look at it, it still works. But the idea is that prana pana samayuktaha pachamyannam chaturvidham praninam deham ashrutaha, taking shelter of the stomachs of all the pranis. Prani means the living entities. What does prani literally mean? Someone who subsists on prana. That's why we have, oh, not this one. Generally, we want to drink spring water because spring water still has prana within it. As soon as you, what do they do to water nowadays? They irradiate water and they do so many things to water. When I was in college, and this is nearly two decades ago, we went on a field trip to a local sewage treatment plant and they showed us how the water coming out of our taps was actually, highly, highly chlorinized and otherwise treated sewage. What you flush down your toilet, that's the same thing that's coming out of your tap, most likely. I don't know if they do this in Sacramento, but in most big cities in the United States and wherever these big cities exist, that's what they do. So we were talking about water wars this morning. The basic necessities of life, fire, moon, sun, water, air, they're all being depleted, or they're being effaced to such a degree, their dharma is being effaced, to such a degree that we can hardly derive benefit from them. Therefore, it's advisable, if you want water that's actually got some life in it, then you have to drink pure spring water. So that's what something we can think about with the word prani. So in the stomachs of all the pranis, I take shelter, and having become Vaishvanara, this fire of digestion, I have this pachaka property. I can cook things within your stomach. And how does he do that? Prana apana samayukta, along with prana and apana, the breath. Breath is very important. Therefore, the air is also very important. You have to breathe good air. And that also, people are going to be, I actually saw some research that was done, cutting-edge research, I think it was a Chinese company or something, they were researching the idea of putting big bubbles out in the middle of the, floating bubbles in the ocean, and just having an artificial environment way out there, where you can have, an air supply drawn from the oxygen in the ocean. Pretty surreal stuff. Kali Yuga is just full of wonders. Anyway, so Krishna says, prana pana samayukta, by his own achintya shakti, this is the point, he's able to do all these wonderful things. Basically, he is sustaining us on all ends. That's why I repeated the sentence. He produces the grains, and he allows us to digest those grains. He gives us the intelligence in the next verse we read, text 15, how to cook those grains. If you can go home and you remember how to cook dinner for your family, thank your stars or thank the Supreme Lord, because he's giving that intelligence. Usually he defers to our own karma. Prarabdha karma is the karma which is on the docket for experience within this life. But, he can change that also if he wants to. I watched this happen with my mother, the Mata Smritir Dhyanam Apohanam Cha, because she had dementia. And her memory span eventually was about 3 days. And it's pretty hard to deal with a person like that. It creates all kinds of problems. So, if we can remember how to drive and so many other things, don't take it for granted, because it's not. It is going to be lost. You're going to lose that ability. We think that, when we hear the idea that, like Shankaracharya said, Nalani dalagata jalamati taralam tatva jivitamatashaya chapalam. This life is as tenuous as a drop of water on a lotus leaf. We think, oh yeah, that means that I can be in a car accident. No, not necessarily. What happens if you wake up tomorrow and can't move the left side of your body because you've not been eating properly and you've developed so much amavisha within your system that it doesn't work anymore? It's finally shut down. Or, you know, what, I mean, there's so many things that can happen in this world, and they do. So we need to recognize that we're living, if we've got everything in good order right now, just use that opportunity while you can, because it will be taken away from you. That is absolutely assured, positively assured. You will lose these assets. It's just a matter of time. We go on forever. We, the intelligence that we assume reincarnates with us, is not necessarily so. We may be intelligent enough to discriminate what to do, what not to do now. But what about in some future state? Even in this life, I've seen people change radically. Shall I tell you a shocking story?
Yes.
When I was in Houston, there was a pious family who would come to the Hare Krishna temple every Sunday. So they had a teenage daughter who was very enthusiastically attending the oddity and blissful as they are at that age. Young teens. And, you know, eventually as she matured, you know, the forces of nature do what they do. So she fell in love with one boy that the family didn't approve of because the boy was a Muslim. And in a conservative Gujarati family, that usually doesn't fly. So somehow or other, you know, despite all discouragement, they decided that they were just too strongly attached, and they eloped together. And, you know, the family was completely outraged. I mean, you know, in some parts of the world, they have these honor killings about that sort of thing, isn't it? So something to think about there as well. But they didn't go that far, but they were really not very happy with her and didn't really facilitate her very much. So she had to live with this boy, you know, because of his character or because of her karma, who's to say. But there was alcohol involved, and then eventually some drugs. And then she got involved in hard drugs, heroin, became addicted. And then naturally, because that was the character of the boy, he left her alone, and she had nothing, because she was completely dependent and, you know, had not planned very well. So then she found herself moving from friend to friend to friend to friend, and eventually she burnt out all her friends, because you can't trust a junkie. What do? They steal from everybody. You cannot trust them. So, you know, eventually she was out on the street. And what do you do when you're female and out on the street and addicted to heroin? You do whatever you have to do, isn't it? And that's what she did. And she started to sell herself just to maintain this habit. Then it doesn't stop there. The last time, the devotees tried to be nice to her and tried to give her a chance, but she was, again, just like she'd burned out all her friends, she burned out all the devotees, stole things, and it was so many problems. So, you know, she found herself there, and the last time I saw her in the temple, she was standing in a corner of the prasadam room, facing the wall, and her hair was like, it looked like, well, you don't know who Medusa was, but, you know, just all over the place, and, you know, her jeans were like filmy with oil and just dirty and unwashed, and she was babbling incoherently, completely insane. This can happen to anyone, and I've seen, you know, I mean, I've seen quite a few wonderful things, and all the people who come to me with their problems, I've heard quite a few wonderful things as well. The point is that we should not take for granted what we have, because it is not granted. This is the point. We've got some tenuous karmic balance that's being temporarily held in suspension, because that's the way it is supposed to play out for now. It has nothing to do with our own endeavor, or the lack of it. Everything likhitam apilalate pronsiktam kasamartha. The Hitopadesha tells us, whatever is written on your forehead, that is what's going to play itself out during your life. They say that there's an indelible barcode on everyone's forehead. only the devatas can read it. You know, and that's what happens. It does, you know, no matter, everybody wants to be a millionaire, isn't it? But only some people do. Because what's fated is fated, and you cannot change that. But Krishna can. This is another point. So no matter how bad your karma is, Krishna can change that. And no matter how good your karma is, it's going to be changed. But, you know, Krishna can take care of you, because that's what he promises. ananyaschintayanto mam ye janaha puryupasate tesham nityabhiyuktanam yoga kshemam vahami aham. If a devotee, someone who has surrendered to Krishna and become dependent on Krishna, this is the thing that really scares us more than anything else, isn't it? When a devotee depends on Krishna, he takes care. And there are so many examples, we could tell so many stories, but the idea, the point that I'm making at this moment is that we are going to lose our assets, so do not be proud and do not be complacent and do not assume things that cannot be assumed. This is the point. I like to quote this doha, jabalagatanamen tapana vyape tabalagakari hari seva. As long as you have the opportunity, use this life to worship Krishna and get out of this cycle of repeated birth and death in which you have to undergo these kinds of problems. Once in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, the sage Vamadeva, he had a stunning realization. He thought, oh my God, once I was the sun. We've been talking about the sun. He said, once I was incarnated as the sun. Once I was Manu. What happened to me? Look at me now. You see? And similarly, how many of us remember when we were animals? Or serial killers? Or, any number. There's so many different forms of life that we can take. We cannot assume anything. We don't know the whole picture. We don't know past, present, or future. We know a little bit of the present, but even that's usually clouded, because most of us are covered by rajoguna tamoguna. Rajoguna means desires. Desires cloud your vision sometimes, don't they? Have you experienced that? Desire clouds your reason, it clouds your sight. And certainly ignorance does. If you don't even know something, you can't misunderstand it. You see? This is very prominent in this day and age, again, because it's Kali Yuga. Anyway, so the point here is that, if we take Baladev's quartet here, the conclusion is that Krishna says, I am the only thing that's to be known anyway. I wrote everything that there is to be known, and it's by my grace you can know. You can know me. Bhaktyama abhijanati yalanyaschasmi tatvatah ityadi. Means that by becoming my devotee, what does it mean to become Krishna's devotee? Four simple things: manmana, bhava madbhakto, madhyaji, manamaskuru. So simple, so easy. It's not, well, I said it's simple. Not necessarily easy, because we're very conditioned. But that conditioning dissolves when we chant this Mahamantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I mentioned the other day, iti shorashukam nam nam kali kalmasha nashanam nataha parotropayo sarva vedeshu drishyate. If you scan throughout all the Vedas looking for an appropriate upaya, or means of purification, self-improvement, we might say, or God-realization, you will not find something that has the potency to wipe out the ill effects that we've been describing of this Kali Yuga. You will not find anything as effective as this Maha Mantra, these 16 names. 16 names means there's Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It's actually only three names, but it's 16 words. This Maha Mantra is especially meant for this Kali Yuga. This process has been especially emphasized on the basis of the Shruti Mantras and the Shastras as well, by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu especially, who is the 16th century founder of this Hare Krishna movement. And now we have the opportunity to take advantage of it if we choose to do so. So our humble request is that everybody please chant this Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It's an easy way to do these four things that Krishna tells us. Manmana, to fix your mind on him. Bhavamad Bhakto, to become his devotee. Because when your heart becomes purified through chanting, that becomes an attractive option. Madhyaji, to worship him in this way. Yajnanam japa yajnosmi, Krishna says in chapter 10. Of all the yajnas or the sacrifices you might offer to God, he says this japa is actually the best thing. This is in Bhagavad Gita. And if not japa, then satatam kirtayanto mam yatantrascha drudhavrata ityadi. Always chanting, singing, as we were doing earlier. He also mentions that in Bhagavad Gita. And mam namaskuru, just bow down to me. The Prabhupada sometimes translates this maha mantra, although it's actually only composed of names of the Lord. He actually translates the spirit with which we should chant this mantra, which is, my dear Lord, O Krishna, O Radharani, please engage me in your service. That's mam namaskuru, you see. So we have an easy way to follow the what is actually the purport. The very last, he says in the Bhagavad Gita in chapter 18, Krishna says, this is the supreme secret, and I'm not going to reveal it to you. And then he speaks this verse for the second time. Do you know this? It's in chapter 9, and it's again in chapter 18. That means it's going to be on the Antima Pariksha, final exam. When the teacher writes something twice on the board, you know it's very important, correct? So there's a few things like that that Krishna says more than once. I mean, actually, he's saying a few very basic things again and again throughout the Bhagavad Gita, but this is what he calls the supreme secret. And we have the way to actually take advantage of that instruction, this maha mantra. It's called Sankirtana, especially when we chant all together like this. So, Kaler Dorshanit He Rajan Asti Hi Eko Mahadguna Kirtanar Eva Krishnasya Mukta Bandha Parambrajet. Just by chanting this Maha Mantra, we can overcome all the ills of the Kali Yuga, Srimad Bhagavatam teaches us. And we not only do we become liberated, but we become transported into spiritual ecstasy. The immense world of spiritual ecstasy, much more variety and much more facility than in this pale material world, the spiritual world. It's called Tripad Vibhuti, three quarters of the Lord's creation. This is just the dark, dank, dusty corner in which all the misfits are sent. I mean, that's our unfortunate condition. So, anyway, I'm going to stop here, but if anybody has any questions or comments, we can discuss them. It's a little bit technical, these verses. We're talking about fire and the moon and the sun, you know, how these things are very central to Krishna consciousness. But the point is that we're not independent and we're not free of Krishna at any point. Yeah, please.
Okay. Like the example you gave about the girl you talked, but that's where most of us, like most of the population is in that condition, but only thing different was she was a devotee and then she turned into that condition. So how, what is the ramification, like how do you bring back them, how do you, and that's going to be true for everybody who is suffering right now, not even, they were not even Krishna conscious, but.
Okay, I'm not sure I understand your question, but I think you're asking that given that everyone is so fallen in the age of Kali, or is instead maybe susceptible to falling
right.
in this age of Kali, then how do we safeguard against that?
Right.
That's what I just have been describing for the past.
That's correct, right.
You know, we chant this Hare Krishna mantra, and there is a way to chant the Hare Krishna mantra that guarantees success also. And that is the process of Krishna consciousness. Mainly it's affected through what? Who knows? The other night in Folsom we discussed hearing. That's one important element. But how do we hear? In good association we hear. Srimad Bhagavatamartanam Asvadai Rasikai Saha, Rupa Goswami says. In the association of devotees who are more advanced. Or if you don't believe Rupa Goswami, then you can listen to Tulasidas. And he said likewise. Do you know this one? What is it? Anyway, he said it. Yeah, thank you. Okay?
Can I ask?
Yeah.
I want to ask him, Prabhupada, this Chandra, Prabhupada said that the moon is not the Chandra lok where the soam comes from, right? The moon we see, is it different from where the actual origin of this soam is?
No, it's not. That's a good question. And this is, sometimes we use this analogy to explain the different manifestations of Godhead. There is the moonshine, which is the source of our soma, the nourishment. I mean, it nourishes our ojas and thereby sustains our lives in these material bodies, the moonshine. But that moonshine is emanating from the moon planet that we can also locate in the sky. And within that moon planet, there is a presiding deity of the moon named Chandra, who is also the in charge of that station for some long, long, but still temporary amount of time, based on his karma. You know, all the devatas, they're actually not individuals so much as they're posts. And by good karma, a person can actually become the moon god. In other words, he can become the president of the moon planet, so to speak. You see? So there's three ways to look at it. Soma is the divinity, or the devata who's in charge of that, and ultimately everything that emanates from the moon is ultimately coming from him. So in that sense, you can say the demigod is all-pervading by his energy. You know, wherever the moon shines, that's where soma, you know, virajman hai, as we say in Hindi. Is that okay? Anything else? Yeah.
Maharaj, a little bit of your background, since you joined when you're 15 years old.
Let's ask other questions, yes, on the lecture first. Anything else? Yeah, please.
Since the moon light is reflected from the sun, wouldn't you get more soma from being in the sunlight?
You're assuming that the moon is a reflection of the sun, correct?
No, the light from the moon is reflected from the sun.
Yeah, you're assuming that, right? Where did you hear that?
Well, astronomy.
Astronomy. And where did the astronomers learn that?
I'm looking at the sky.
I'm sorry?
I'm looking at the sky.
Okay, so by sense perception, right? Okay, now when I look at the sky and see the moon looks about the size of a dime. Is that accurate?
No.
Right. So sense perception is a faulty process. What do we accept, our epistemology, to use a big fancy Latin word, is that, you know, we hear from authorities and we privilege that process over just, you know, observation of the senses, or even the other praman, which we call anuman, which means, you know, speculating and guessing and extrapolating from information that we know. It's a faulty process. In essence, it's a faulty process, and we need to recognize that, because many times, you know, scientists will give us a view that's maybe not accurate or even wrong. And many times we've seen, in fact, that scientists will later, you know, cancel out a previously held belief. And, you know, so then the question arises, are we constantly advancing in knowledge by that process, or are we perpetually in ignorance? You see the point? So in Krishna consciousness, we accept what is called Shabda Praman, which is the proof of authoritative testimony coming from reputable, reliable, standard authorities. And there are rigorous requirements for qualifying as one of those as well. Is that clear?
On that, why is there a dark side of the moon?
Dark side of the moon.
Like, one where it's not, like, as if the light reflected on, like, on the Earth. When the sun reflects light, well, the sun hits the Earth, well, the rays, then we can see, like, the side that's not facing the sun, has, it's like nighttime and it's dark.
Right, right.
And we see the same with the moon, so...
Well, you don't really see the dark side of the moon, do you?
That was just a...
Do you see it? You can't. If it's dark, you can't see it.
Wait, you can. Yeah. You know, it's not like half a moon.
Yeah.
It was a word of speech. See.
Yeah.
But
right. Well, the moon goes through phases just like all of us do. I mean, I don't want to give you glib answers here, but it's not really on the topic. These are things we're hearing from authorities here, and we're discussing, you know, the science of Ayurveda, which is very, you know, it's very scientific. I'm not a specialist in that branch of knowledge, so I'm not the best person to answer it, I would say, honestly. Is that okay?
Okay.
Anything else?
You were mentioning how you did association, and then basically, like, just to, so there's so much disbalance right now, and with association, we can just bring that thing. And in the normal world, like, again, we are all guilty, like, we have those times where we have to work extra and all those things.
Yeah.
How to keep the balance, and then,
you're
not even able to.
Well, eventually, it's going to have to come to the hard, cold reality that we're living in a society that basically doesn't work. And that's the thing, that's the bitter pill that nobody seems to want to swallow. And, you know, it's not an easy thing to accept that, because it means you have to look, you have to, at a very fundamental level, you have to start looking for alternatives. You know, Srila Prabhupada was actually pushing this increasingly in his later years. In fact, he gave roughly 80% of the instructions that he ever spoke on the topic of Varnashram Dharma, in which he emphasized the socioeconomic aspects of that dharma. He gave 80% of those instructions within the last 3 years that he was present, because he saw, I think, that in his own disciples even, you know, that there were challenges to them following the basic practices of sadhana bhakti, because the environment itself is not conducive. This is the problem. So you can try to work within the system, which means you basically patronize it, and try to fight against it from the inside, which is a tremendous degree of tension. Or you can be part of the solution instead. But that involves some radical departures. In my opinion, this topic is so huge and so difficult that I would not suggest any radical moves at this point, especially if they're financial. you know, we have a lot to learn about the subtlety of this great topic of, you know, of dharma generally, and Varnashram is a subset of that. Maybe some of the observations we've made about these Ayurvedic principles can demonstrate how subtle it gets. You know, there's a lot of work to do, but at least these are the things that the intelligent people should be putting their attention into, because it is the future of humanity. Otherwise, we're just going to forfeit our humanity, and that's mainly what's going to be lost. I don't see a day, frankly, when, you know, this great artificial socioeconomic facade of the new superpower, which is the transnational corporate class, I don't see that this is all going to come crashing down and everybody's going to be hungry as they were in the 1930s in this country. What I do see is that the humanity is going to be increasingly forfeited to keep the thing alive. And that's even worse. Because dharmasya hina pashupisamana, we're like animals without dharma. Is that a satisfactory answer? It's a tough topic, I will admit. And I don't have all the answers either.
Absolutely, it's a very, very good answer. And sometimes we understand that we have to take some steps, but if you can just deep from your experience, maybe just give a few of us, it may be radical, but at least we can look forward, okay, we have to go those.
You're asking me for advice about this.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I can only tell you what I did. I was in the University of Washington on a PhD track when I just became completely overwhelmed with a profound appreciation not only of the corruption endemic within institutions of that nature, you know, which was supported by my brother-in-law, who is a, well, I won't say where he teaches, but he's one of them. And, you know, he confirmed the things that I was starting to see. Meanwhile, I was seeing a tremendous thirst in the American people for real spiritual life. And, you know, I felt that it was possible to give that to them, because what Prabhupada has given us is actually so valuable in that way and has helped me in so many ways. So I quit. I joined the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, and now I'm translating and doing that service. And, you know, it's not 100%, you know, flawless sort of choice, maybe I can say, but at least for me it's better, and I think it's better for people at large as well, because maybe I can say something that will make a difference to someone.
If whatever responsibilities we have, as soon as we get rid of those things, we should just come out of this materialistic world and then basically maybe just go and live in Vrindavan.
I'm not saying that. No, I would not advise that. That's for me, it's good. You know, but I'm done with all this stuff. So, and not everybody's like that, you know, everybody is different, everybody requires an individualized solution, and that's exactly what Varnashram supplies, which I believe is why Prabhupada told us to look into it and seriously start, you know, try to move in that direction.
Well, the ashrams are very clearly delineated in our shastras, so if we follow, I mean, is this Varnashram that Prabhupada talked about? Is it in any way different from the way we have four ashrams, you know, and at this age you have this ashram and you...
It is
that.
Different, actually. For the last 100 years, every acharya in our line has been emphasizing the need for what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur called, or actually Bhaktivinoda Thakur also called, Daivi Varnashram Dharma. Because you have Manava Dharma, which is generally all the Dharma Shastra authorities. They accept the and they respect Manu as the, you know, representative of this general class of literatures. And in fact, even in the Shruti Mantra, there's at least one reference that says whatever Manu says is medicine. So that's perhaps well-founded. But to strictly apply Manava Dharma in the modern day and age is a real problem. And the acharyas have also made a spiritual distinction that we have to keep in the forefront, and that is that, you know, while perhaps using the social infrastructure of the Manava system, we have to ensure that the hetu, how do you translate hetu? Yeah, the motive, you know. Or one's own desire, you know, or involvement is based on surrender to Krishna. Varnashram without Krishna becomes the caste system, and that's exactly what happened to India, and you know, there's so much discontent with it for that reason. Maybe not in this generation because nobody's followed for a few. But, you know, it did cause problems. The point is that unless you have selfless purity at the root of this thing and devotion to God, it's a waste of time, as the Bhagavatam says. Shrama eva hi kevalam. It's just a waste of time, if not an exploitive system just as bad as the modern day and age that we're trying to escape from. You see my point? Is it answering your question?
Yeah, to some extent, yes. Because that means this, the way it is described in our Manu Shastras is that you have certain stages in life where you do certain ashrams and then...
Yeah, this is all in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's very clear. I mean, sometimes people feel that Varnashram is, you know, less important than what we call Parodharma or pure Bhakti Yoga. But if that were the case, it would not be in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the Bhagavad Gita as well. And not only in one place, in several passages of the Bhagavatam itself, the text of the Bhagavatam. Let me tell you something. In the Vishnu Purana, there are several chapters on this topic, devoted to this topic, instigated by a question that Sagar Maharaj, in the line of Ramchandra, was asking his guru, Arha Muni. He said, listen, I am the king. These prajas are all my concern. I have to do something to help them spiritually. I want to bring ordinary people in my care to pure Krishna consciousness. This was his concern. It's not a concern that's different from the concerns of any ISKCON member, right? So he said, tell me what to do. And his guru gave him a long, long answer, as I said, throughout many chapters, but one of the verses that is, you know, maybe sums up the general flavor of his instruction is one that's quoted ubiquitously by Srila Prabhupada throughout his books, and that is Varnashrama Charavata Purushena Parapuman Vishnur Aradhite Pungsan Nanyat Tatoshakaranam. for the ordinary person, the access point to pure devotional service is going to be Varnashram. And in that sense, there is no other way to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead except to become civilized through that system, come to the level of humanity, as we were discussing, and then, you know, only a human being can be Krishna conscious. We know that. Animals cannot be Krishna consciousness, and humanity is not defined biologically. It's defined by adherence to dharma. You see? So we have things to learn about that. Is that okay? Anything else?
I just want to refine his question, Prabhu's question, should we make a goal, in your life, busy life, whatever we engage in, to have, at the end, we renounce life and then settle down in one of the, Mayapur or Vrindavan?
That's a good idea, I think. While you can, because believe me, these dhams are disappearing fast. Sabhi loop to ho raha hai. I see it, you know. Until just a few years ago, there's a Brahma Kund at Govardhan next to the Mansa Devi Mandir. And, you know, it's just become a big garbage dump full of green plastic bags, and, you know, you can't even go there and do anything. And there's so many hundreds and hundreds of tirthas throughout Brajamandala, it's very hard to take care of them all. And especially with they keep paving over them and building, high-rise condominiums everywhere. Mm-hmm. And what about the Yamuna? That's a whole. Yeah. Don't get me started on that.
I heard your lecture.
Vrindavan will be software park. They're building a software park there.
There's already a Radharani shopping mall and golf course. I'm not kidding. Radharani golf course at Govardhan. Believe it or not. And now that we were just talking the other day, it used to be such nice Ramanreti, gold dust, the powdery sand, cool to the touch. And now that they've put this tarmac all the way around, it's just turned into a freeway. And, you know, it's very, very difficult. You have to blister your feet trying to do the Puttakama. You see, so therefore I say it's all going aprakarta. Very quickly, so yes, it's a good idea if you want to take advantage of the dham while you can see it. Otherwise, it's going to have to be all mental, mansik, because you won't be able to see anything anymore. This is the point of varnashram as well, or dharma in general, is to make explicit the principles, you see. Dharma Shastra is the single most voluminous body of knowledge that exists in the Sanskrit language, according to Klaus Klostermeyer, who's an Oxford scholar, friendly to ISKCON and known to Srila Prabhupada. The reason is that it attempts to take these abstract principles of spiritual life and translate them into concrete, round-level, day-to-day reality for a human being. And that's not an easy task, because you have to consider the time, place, and the recipients. And that's infinite. Therefore, the Shastras are, you know, they span geographic regions, they go across centuries, and there's many, many, many hundreds of them, but they all basically follow Manu to one degree or another. The thing that we can add to that, or maybe I should say is, you know, the way that we can purify that system is by adding Krishna consciousness to it, and this is what our acharyas have been stressing. Not just Srila Prabhupada. I mentioned how much he was stressing this and how increasingly he was stressing it, but that's because he inherited that mandate from his own spiritual master, who got it from his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And it's going back, as I said, to Vishnu Purana. It's not something separate from our tradition. It's a very important instruction of Srila Prabhupada that I feel we've not really been able to deliver very much on. So that's just my opinion. Anything else? Yeah, ladies' side. No questions. Okay. I'm sorry. Himaja. You clear your slate, and then you go back to work for the week, and then you come back in the same filthy... I know. I very well know that. I've been through that. That's why I quit. I mean, I hate to I hate to rub it in, but the point is that, you know, there's a few things that we can consider. The doha that I had forgotten earlier, binu satsanga na harikatha binu mohana bhaga moha gaye binu rama pada hoy na dridhana raga. You cannot have really effective sadhana without devotees. And you know, I was visiting one devotee in Columbus, Ohio. He has a very good idea. You know, he's in this condition as well. We all are. And it's only going to get worse, because what happens? You only get more of what you tolerate. We are enabling abuse in this system. That's why I made a radical step. Anyway, so he has a good idea that as long as this is our condition, for whatever reason, which I won't question or judge, he somehow or other figured out how to get association, even though it's virtually impossible to go to a temple. And let me tell you something, it's much easier to go to the temple here than it is in India.
Yeah.
You know this, but in the cities at least. Even in Vrindavan, it's really challenging. I mean, India, my God. You can do one thing in one day in India. It's not like you can knock off half a dozen errands in one morning like you can in America. That's just the way it is. So, anyway, so his idea is this. He got everybody together on Skype from within the congregation, and at 5:30 in the morning, they all tune in and they chant japa together. And there's a little pressure there also, because if somebody doesn't show up on Skype, it's evident to the whole community. Just like if you don't come to the temple, everybody notices. So that's, you know, we need a little push like that, and that's actually one of the benefits of satsanga. But in addition to that, you feel a sense of community, and it's reiterated every morning. And it's a tremendous help. Now, he also has a Bhagavatam class as well later on, which, you know, I mean, nowadays, you know, there's a security cam everywhere, and there's like Siri tells you everything you want to know, and, you know, I mean, there must be some way that you can plug into that as well, even perhaps when you're commuting to work or whatever. I mean, there must be a way. These people would know it. They all work there in San Jose. So, you know, these are some things that we can consider. The acharyas, they update this process, you know, with each generation, because it's necessary to do that. The other night I was powering up my computer before the lecture, and I said, please, you know, be patient for a few minutes while my talpatra boots up. Used to be they would speak from a palm leaf manuscript, but it's, you know, it's 2014. And we're in Silicon Valley, and so this is the thing. But it works. So this is called Yukta Vairagya. And this is why we have spiritual masters. They can consider these principles the way the Dharma Shastra does. And they're like living, talking, walking Dharma Shastras, and that's exactly what the Mahabharata teaches us. Tartako apratishtha. You cannot argue about these things, because everybody's got an opinion. What's the use? Shrutayo vibhinna, even the shrutis, what to speak of the smritis, you will find apparent contradictions, right? Nasa avrishir yasya matam na bhinnam. And when you go to college, you don't get the PhD unless you say something different. So that adds to the new opinions every day. So, dharmasya tatvasya nihitam guhaya mahajano yena gata sapanta. The real truth of dharma is hidden within the heart of the pure devotee. Therefore, whatever path has been traversed by these mahajanas, these acharyas, and their spiritual master especially, that is the path to follow. You know, that's why a guru is so necessary, and why Krishna endorses that tradition in Bhagavad Gita. They help us with these concrete, practical details. It's an important thing. Is that helpful? Okay, anything else?
Anything about life? You stay in Vrindavan for more than half of the year.
Yeah, when it gets too hot, then we come and tour America.
Something about the, you know, life in Vrindavan.
Oh, well, I've told you something about life in Vrindavan. Read Krishna book. You know, this is the real Vrindavan is not necessarily Prakat so much. I mean, 10 years ago I was living at Govardhan Hill, and it was a shocking realization I had, because I realized that the Krishna consciousness practiced externally is not so explicit at Govardhan Hill than it is in Vrindavan. Even though our shastras teach that spiritually Govardhan Hill is actually spiritually more potent than Vrindavan, even, in a sense. But when you actually go there, you don't see it. People don't wear tilak that much like they do in Vrindavan. There are not that many temples, and you don't hear the bells ringing and the oddity, and, you know, the Krishna consciousness generally is just not that explicit at Govardhan, believe it or not. And so this is the trend of the future, unfortunately, because even Vrindavan is becoming like that. There's a McDonald's in Mathura, and, you know, actually it's an interesting thing. One disciple of Bhakti Vikas Swami told me that he has a preaching center, he's Indian, and he's got a preaching center at Govardhan. And, you know, I mean, he told me that people all the time ask me that, who are you to start a preaching center at Govardhan? These people are all Nityasiddhas. And I said, he said, I have to tell them that I'm sorry, but these Nityasiddhas are patronizing McDonald's. So, well, I have to do something, you see. Therefore, I said, you know, sabhi lup thoda hai.
The Gurukul,
Rauji,
you do the Gurukul there, how is it?
We have an association called Giriraj Publishing, which has been through several stages of metamorphosis. In the old days, that means 10 years ago by modern standards, Gopi Paranadana Prabhu was settled at Govardhan, and he opened what he called Srimad Bhagavatam Vidyapitam. He wanted to teach Srimad Bhagavatam, and in order to impart the Srimad Bhagavatam lessons that only he could impart, he wanted to teach Sanskrit as well as, you know, how to read the commentaries and other aspects of our traditional educational system in the traditional manner as well. Shortly before his departure, most of his senior students who were brahmacharis got married, and it's very difficult to live at Govardhan, as I mentioned, for other reasons even. So they shifted to Vrindavan, but they also split into two wings, which is the publishing part and the educational part. So I'm actually in the publishing part more than the education part, so I'm not teaching that much. But I'm working in translation, and the idea is to train future translators from the younger generation for the future of the BBT publications, translations from our acharyas especially, because that's very, very important. So many questions that we have are answered in the literature if we just take the time to actually read it and study it. Even in Srila Prabhupada's books, it's practically a lifetime to really assimilate everything that Prabhupada has given. But even to understand Prabhupada's books, it's very helpful to refer to the other acharyas, because they sometimes go into detail where Prabhupada doesn't. You see? Is that okay? Anything else? Yes, again.
You said at one point, science is kind of like perpetual ignorance, because it's like they say something and then they change it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, well, that's a generalization of science at large, because there's many like real life applications that work, and there's a lot of facts in science. So it's not exactly perpetual ignorance. We're actually, there's knowledge. It's slowly like you there's slow knowledge. There's slowly we're getting more knowledge. And I feel that in religion it's static. There's no change. So that's more like that's more like perpetual ignorance.
Everyone has his opinion. Ignorance, you know, you've made two points, basically. Number one, science is constantly advancing. I'm not convinced of that, you know. Let me no offense to the doctors. When my mother was young, they told her that for some reason her hair all fell out when she was 13, and they never really explained that, but they said that she probably would not be able to have children. She had two sets of twins and one boy in between. You know, she had a massive stroke and heart attack in 2006 when I was visiting, I thought for only 2 weeks, and I ended up staying for about 4 or 5 years taking care of her until she left this world as a result of that. But in 2006, they told us that she had only 2 or 3 days to live. And she left this world in 2011. So, you know, there's a lot. I myself take advantage of allopathy when I have to, and it's very, you know, I'm not knocking the profession or the benefits of it. But the point is that because it's based on this pratyaksha praman mixed with a little bit of anuman, it is necessarily imperfect, whereas what we're teaching is perfect instead of static. The reason it's not static is because it's dynamic. The application is constantly changing. The realizations are constantly expanding. They're being restated, but in different ways relative to the time, place, and circumstance. And that's dynamic, it's not static.
But the knowledge is the same.
Knowledge is eternal. Reality, Krishna defines in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, nasato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sata. That which is real doesn't stop or change. That which is unreal cannot persist, period. So knowledge means static, if you will, but I've demonstrated already that it's not static, it's ecstatic.
Some would argue that some of the knowledge in religions is incorrect.
Oh, this is a very good point, yeah, and I would be the first to agree with that. Yeah. I mean, what passes as religion and what passes as knowledge in religion, there's a lot of problems there. I've no doubt about that. Yeah. I mean, religion is, you know, many people believe that religion is one of the main problems in the world, and I've got no problem with that either. But you have to understand on this scientific platform that I'm approaching and trying to explain, you've got to understand religion as it is, as opposed to religion as it isn't. Therefore, it's called Bhagavad Gita as it is. And, you know, people get bogged down in dogmas and in, you know, lifeless traditions and in, you know, pseudo-hypocritical, you know, nonsense that they call religion, you know, or, you know, I mean, there's so many things that we can say about that. Yeah, I mean, you've got a point there, and it's appreciable. You had a question?
Yeah, I think he's trying to separate religion from spirituality.
Yeah, this has become a recent thing now. They talk about I'm spiritual but not religious.
Yeah.
Somebody recently sent me an article from, I think, maybe BBC or something, that, you know, somebody was actually saying, well, you know, it's actually not even so bad to be religious, you know, as well as spiritual. There's something to say for that as well.
Okay, the difference is orange juice versus orange drink.
Maybe, I don't know. It's rasa at any rate. Okay, anything else?
And also he says, you know, that the light reflects, the sun gives light to moon and moon gives light to us. So actually this is scientific principle, which is also, it comes under Krishna. Because Krishna says, I am the cause of all causes. So science is no different than spirituality. If you go deep.
Well, one thing I've seen is that, you know, for example, in the 1980s, I was in Austin, Texas, and we had a restaurant there, which is about one block from the University of Texas and 2 or 3 blocks from the state capitol. So we got university students and politicians coming to the restaurant most of the time. They were getting prasadam every day. They loved the restaurant. One of the people who came to visit us was Dr. George Wald. And Dr. George Wald is, of course, Nobel laureate physicist. And he's now chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Hare. I mean, I don't know now. This is 20 years ago. He may have passed on. But, you know, he was deeply interested in spiritual life, and many mature physicists in the zenith of their career, they actually realized that there are questions that this so-called hard science can't really go into. And I want to know. And where do you go when you're in that, you know, position? it's you know, faith is a wonderful thing. It's often knocked in this world for various reasons, and everything in this world has its hetu. But you know, this is a fact. Sometimes, yeah, please.
But I like to say that the scientists that are looking into these fantastic telescopes are looking into the face of God.
That's right. That's what I mean. Yeah.
In a sense, you can say, I mean, because everything is God. We've described this soma is Krishna, and the Agni is also Krishna. But that's not Bhagavan realization. If you want to actually have a relationship with the God who dances, then you have to take up bhakti.
Yes,
who is it who said that? I will never believe in a God who doesn't dance. I think Nietzsche said that. If he dances, then that's okay with me. So our God dances. But, you know, if you want to have a personal relationship that satisfies the heart as much as the head, then we have to chant Hare Krishna.
He takes human form. God takes human form.
In a sense. Of course, his so-called human form is always transcendental. But yeah. Okay, otherwise, if no more questions, I think we can stop here. Thank you very much. All glories to Shri Prabhupada.